Tonight we have special guest Xander Cannon as he discusses his comic book series Kaiju Max. This will contain detailed plot spoilers and heavy-duty language. Listener discretion is advised. Let me set the stage for you. I had just come out of my Cineplex. I forgot what I saw. It was either Ant-Man or Minions. I can't remember. Across the street was a comic book store, looking at new releases, because I was trying to load up on some Ant-Man comics to try to educate myself on them. And all of a sudden, I see Kaiju Max. And I'm thinking, okay, is this Power Rangers? What is this? And I look at it, and I see it's Kaiju being sent to this island that's like this prison facility. Maximum security facility island. To me, this was pure ingenious. It feels like E.T. meets Godzilla or that movie that I don't know if we get to, Baby Secret of the Lost Legend. Xander, I have to ask you, you must have watched a lot of kaiju movies in the 70s and 80s.
Well, you know, it's funny because I wasn't really... The thing that kicked it off was not really loving those as a kid, because I did. I mean, I watched them when I would see them on the UHF local channel or whatever. But the thing that really got me into it was watching Ultraman with my son. When he was little, my son is Korean, and I wanted to get him something with an Asian hero. And so I found a DVD set of Ultraman, and we watched those, and he was nuts about them. And so I just ended up watching them all with him, and it's like, this is the most insane thing I've ever seen. That sort of 60s, that 60s tokusatsu, like, adventure series, you know, there was Ultraman, that was Godzilla of that era, it just clicked with me. It was so ridiculous and so over the top and so much like, we're just throwing whatever at the wall to see what sticks. That was the thing that appealed to me in a way that it didn't really grab me when I was a kid. It just... There was an irony to it, I guess, that I enjoyed as well.
I will say this much. As a kid, I didn't really appreciate any of the kaiju movies. To me, it was just guys in rubber suits that could not see because it was before Jim Henson finally perfected the technology with putting video cameras in the Gorg stomach and Fraggle Rock. I think that's how we started off. And then he finally perfected it with Big Bird and Sesame Street. Imagine to my chagrin when you get older and it pops up. Still not interested. I think if finally they're watching Godzilla 98 for the 50th time and saying, you know what, maybe those kaiju movies of the 50s, 60s, and 70s weren't as bad as I thought. There are some where you have the kids, but the problem is when you try to Americanize kaiju films, when you have the English dub with the kids, I don't know what kind of kids, but they all sound like they've been castrated. I mean, I don't know if you probably watch a lot of MST3K where they had the Gamera, so of course they had all the annoying kids, and I don't know if they were that annoying in the Japanese versions, but when you dub them, especially like with Itchy and Kenny, even with the 21st century Godzilla movies, the kids were always like high-pitched annoying, kids couldn't act. I don't know exactly who they got to dub the voices, but they were terrible. So,
terrible.
I try my best to read the IDW Godzilla comics and any kaiju comics that were out there. This one, however, I have to say, I could see this as a series. I like how the shoe is on the other foot, because for every kaiju movie I've ever watched, you may get 15, 20 minutes of the monster battling, and then you have to have the humans and whatever story they have to talk about, whether it's save the Earth, or, you know, don't pee in the ocean, or whatever the case may be. This one, however, is just, because it's hand-drawn, we get full kaiju, and some original characters to boot. I do love the cover for the first issue, where it does feel very prison-esque, where you have, I thought it was Godzilla's son, Mija, is that what it was I think that's what he was called. Majora?
Minya?
Minya, that's what it was. Yeah, Minya, yeah. And he's chained up in a lake. You have an octopus creature that's lifting weights. And then it almost looks like Spike from ABC's Dinosaurs. He's got the teardrop tattoo. And I guess he's got all these fire-singed tattoos. And it looks like he's holding a thing of nuclear waste. And you just have, of course, our hero that just wanted to take care of his kids, trying to get food back to them.
It was interesting because it's like, boy, you really have your work cut out for you when you have to explain that concept in one image. How am I going to get this across? Ramming whatever I could into that picture and thinking like, God, I hope this people get it, what I mean.
It is interesting. How did you come up with the idea? It's the monsters that are now captured and they're able to be put on this island. We could say that it's Ultraman. We could say that it's E.T. or whatever the case may be. How did you just finally were able to create different characters that we haven't seen before? I know there's a lot of them. A lot of people haven't seen. There's Ultraman, and then there are versions of Ultraman that I don't think have come to the States yet. There's one of them that I think Ultraman Zero that has Kaora.
So,
has who? Kaora. It's this cow god. It was okay. It's from an Ultraman. I think it's Ultraman 7 or Ultraman Zero. It came out in the late 70s.
Okay.
Yeah, it's never been Americanized. You can find bits and pieces on the web, but just clips of it. But there's a character known as Kaora that he's a cow god that is 50 foot tall. It's a cow, but he'll eat people.
Naturally.
And, yeah, Ultraman has to fight it. And that's what I was kind of curious about, this goat creature, if that was based on anything from the Ultraman series.
No, the goat creature from Devil's Concept came from. I always wanted to do. So, I mean, basically it started with, like, all monsters all the time. They're on Monster Island. What do they talk about? How do they relate to each other? But I really wanted to give it a very sort of solid, like, time-tested genre approach. And I thought, well, what would be the way? Well, why are they all there? And then things you start thinking, well, what are these time-tested genres? Police drama or a comedy? And then I thought, well, prison drama right there. That's do it. Watched all of Oz and I watched a bunch of prison movies and read some prison books and stuff. And I was just like, all right, that should get me going. And started putting it in there. And then, you know, it's like, obviously my heart was wanting to do these Ultraman characters and Godzilla characters. Then I thought, well, the gangs, big things about prisons. Well, I wanted to have the Japanese monsters and I want to have the guards. But then it's like, well, let's think about monsters. Let's think about everything at that scale, you know. And let's think about the cryptids, you know, and cryptozoological creatures, which are another sort of obsession of mine, and so as well as aliens and anything else that would be big like that, robots and so forth. So yeah, the creature from Devil's Creek, I wanted to be sort of he's a cryptid, and I wanted him to sort of serve the purpose of like the guy who just got sent to maximum security prison for like tax fraud and realizes on the first day how completely hosed he is, prison with all these murderers or drug dealers or what have you. What's interesting about the series is when you start working on it, it's like it just expands outward where you think like, oh, you know what else I could put in there, and you know, you just start making notes and it just goes on and on and on.
So who's your Adebisi then?
Well, Adebisi is this character named Zahn, and he shows up in the third issue. Yeah, he's sort of like super sociopathic, super criminal. He's always a great character to have.
Brought up Oz, because that was the comparison that I was thinking of, was, you know, just how much the series itself, like as we were reading it and looking at the different sects, that's really what it did remind me of, was watching Oz and seeing, you know, you've got the Italians, you've got the Irish, you've got the Spanish, you've got all of the different sects within a prison, and you play that very, very well. Oh. The very beginning issue, you have this nice little footnote where it's like, you know, here we are, we're going to follow basically in the light, seeing its point of view from your main character, and he may not always be in the best of situations, but he's going to go through and we're going to learn with him who he should be talking to, who's probably not the best to be talking to, who's not the people to take favors from, and who are the people to take favors from. And mixing that in with, and forgive me for the analogy, but some of the, what I would consider the B sci-fi movie monsters that were guilty pleasures way back in the day, and even still for a lot of us today. So it was a really cool, you keep saying, you know, oh, it's never expanding, and it truly is. I mean, you could always have it broken up into all kinds of monsters from around the world if you did all of that research. And there's so many different venues you could go down. It's really, it's an intriguing story to look through.
There's a, at a certain point, I wanted to sort of have a little bit of, like, a rift between sort of the guards, you know, which are all based on Ultraman and that era of thing, and then, like, the police slash FBI, which I wanted to be more like Kamen Rider or Shogun Warriors or that kind of stuff. So that, and that was really fun too, because to sort of take a look into that and go, oh, let's base this character on kind of a Mazinger mecha robot. Anyway, yeah, it's just, it's constant, you just constantly think about, like, well, what's at this scale, you know, what's crazy, just crazy enough to make as another sort of group of characters.
I do have to ask about two designs with the flying turtle with the red shell. That's got to be something out of Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, well, that was meant to imply that sort of, you know, they're like the new gang. Like, they're the younger sort of up and coming gang, where as opposed to Ape Whale and his sort of Japanese kaiju, they're all kind of like, it's almost like they're sort of the fading line of Akaza or the Mafia that are being all taken over by the younger sort of... So yeah, we're going to see more of them, Mario, the type of characters that would be in Mario Brothers or Pokemon or that kind of stuff.
I was curious about Ape Whale because I don't know if you ever saw Cloverfield, but when that movie a week or two before it was about to come out, a lot of people were stating, oh, it is a gigantic mutated whale. And they did have this image and claiming that was a Cloverfield monster. After the movie came out, you only saw bits and pieces of it, and it was not a giant mutated whale, which kind of sucked. Comparing what the Cloverfield monster looked like in the movie, the mutated whale looked like, even though it was false, it was going for that giant mutated whale. Is this an homage or just coincidence? Because I would love to see a giant mutated whale somewhere in comic book or movie form.
Well, in that sense, it's a coincidence. The ape whale is meant to be a reference to his name, Gojira, portmanteau of gorilla and kujira, which means whale in Japanese. So ape whale is meant to be like, in that he's sort of like the original sort of king of the monsters.
Now, you did mention, of course, with the big bad in this universe, because I guess that would be Hellamoth at this point. After all, he doesn't want to be called, or it doesn't want to be called Hellamoth. It's going by, I love it, you know, don't call me by my kaiju name. That's what the squishers are calling it, which I guess would be the humans. A chain of command in this, go with a giant turtle and a giant whale. To me, an ape and a whale combined, that would be the ultimate killing machine right there. You have this giant snapping turtle, which also, would, you know, that can fly. But then you have, I guess, an insect that could shoot electricity. So the biggest question I would have is, from top to bottom, weakest to deadliest, or how would it go exactly, or it's too soon?
It's meant to all be like prison, in that, like, if you come in and you're weak, then you sort of group up with your homies, with your, you know, with the people who's from your area, or is sort of in line with you at race, or just the way it is, and just the way it is in prison. And I mean, maybe that's a positive thing, and usually it's, I think that if you need protection, you're in big trouble if you owe somebody something. So, I mean, you know, one of the things that I like about this as a sort of a more complex version of monsters is that it isn't strictly mano a mano. It's weak but crafty. You can, they can sort of like set people against each other and sort of hide in the background, that kind of stuff. That sort of shrewdness counts as much as strength in that kind of situation.
The war, this is not based on anybody that I know from any kaiju movie, but for some reason, and I don't know why, I almost thought it was the character from Godzilla Final Wars, and I wasn't too sure. He's got that...
Which one?
Oh, the human, the one that looked like Sergeant Slaughter. I can't remember his name.
Kang?
Yes.
All the guards are meant to... They're really meant to sort of recall anyone except for basically the Science Patrol and the original Ultraman, or in all, there's a version of sort of like the human sort of anti-monster group in every version of Ultraman, and they're meant to sort of be that group. Character of Kang, the warden, basically he's just meant to be sort of like the hard-nosed, you know, he's meant to be the hard-nosed warden from the monster's point of view, and then a reasonable person from the human's point of view. That's it. I named him Kang because I thought it was like a really terrifying name until you realize, oh, he's just a little person. And then he realized, oh no, he's not just a person, he's this giant, like, space superhero.
Yes, this is definitely everything out of the Warden beating up the monsters, or I guess at the time it kind of reminded me of Super Mario Brothers. Like, what if Mario was a dick? Like, what if he just came into the Mushroom Kingdom and he was decimating all these monsters, and Mario was really the monster, not the princess. The princess was really just like a royal bitch, and it was actually the twist ending. Koopas and Bowser were just trying to protect their kingdom, and that's why they locked her up.
Those are always uplifting ideas, I think, those fan theories.
So how long did it take you to publish this, and how long does it take to do an issue?
Let's see. The process of getting it published, it took a couple of years. There was a long sort of point where I was finishing up my last book, which is called Heck, Top Shelf, and then I was pitching this around, and I was actually intending not to draw it. I was intending to have it be more like something that I would work on the side. You know, it's like, it's always nice to have your name on a couple projects. But the way things worked out, I ended up drawing it, and so, you know, sort of took a couple years to sort of, like, to go from the back burner to sort of the only thing that I'm doing. And as for how long it takes, I mean, it's basically, I'm working on it all digitally, which is a huge time saver, and so I can really kind of get it done in about a month, but I have to take a break after six issues, because it's just like, it just about kills, because I'm writing it, penciling it, inking it, lettering it, coloring it, all that stuff. That I have Jason Fisher, who helps me with the colors, but essentially it's a one man show, and it's exhausting.
I do have to say, when it comes to these kaiju battles, some of them have like maybe 5 or 10 battles, and they're sometimes timed to like 5 to 15 minutes each. I do love the balance in this one. The monsters are basically, instead of the humans talking for like 45 minutes and the monsters come back in the fight, you've made the monsters, or kaiju for this argument, you've made them a little more human, or however they're trying to survive in this maximum facility prison island, and how each and every one of them is playing off of each other. Of course, in issue 3, we have one that's starting to rap, which I do enjoy. How do you come up with talking parts and then realize, okay, when is the time to build up and do a battle? Does anybody really complain too much? Is it too much talking, not enough action, because is it a kaiju? Or how do you find that balance? Human, kaiju talking, then finally like one big battle towards the end.
After I sort of come up with all of the plot lines that I'm going to weave in a season or whatever, like, well, each issue needs 3 or 4 sort of iconic big scene, a real twist, or like a big ending, or like a really funny gag, or something like that. Something that you can kind of see out of context and go, oh, okay, I get the concept of this comic. And 3 or 4 of those an issue, and then I kind of work around that. And I know that I have these big splashy scenes, you know, where someone is being betrayed, or someone is being murdered, or somebody is a funny sort of on prison stuff. It makes me worry less about having talky scenes. I do tend to be a pretty talky writer, like just kind of let scenes meander. Then I don't worry so much about it, and I let scenes develop as they need to, and let characters have their personality and their own little worries and their own little problems, and because I know that in a page something's going to explode or die. Or
for a newbie coming in, or at least for someone who's watched kaiju movies, but a newbie coming in that's ready to pick up this comic and get into the series, will there be like a Kenny or an Itchy or any type of, is there going to be a resistance group that feels that the kaiju are being mistreated and they're trying to free them?
There will be some element to that. There's a kid character in it already who comes up in the third issue, and he's very much like, he's like Ichiro in All Monsters Attack, if you've seen that one. That a lot of people, that movie represents the absolute low point of all Godzilla movies. I don't agree. I think it's the greatest movie that's ever been made, but it is super stupid. It's about a boy who dreams his way to Monster Island and has an adventure with Godzilla's son, Minya, who has shrunk down to human size. It's terrible by every measure. But I mean, it's... So anyway, I have a version of that where a child dreams his way to Kaiju Max and it befriends Woofy, who is the son of Ape Whale, and he's basically the equivalent of Minya. He has a bit of that vibe, but there's also going to be more of the sort of like what you're talking about, the insane child who thinks these children there, that these monsters should be free to destroy boats and buildings. And
yeah, I do remember All Monsters Attack. I can only watch now with the audio commentary. I thought that one made absolutely no sense. Yeah, the kid to stand up to bullies, he dreams he goes to Monster Island. Yeah, it's Sucker Punch, but with Kaiju, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty much cinema's greatest achievement.
You know what a movie you'd rather watch it over? Godzilla 98, that's really saying a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, so I love it. And I think that my love for that movie is when people are. I think that there are people who picked up Kaiju Max and kind of were like, "Nah, this isn't for me." And it's just like, "Yeah, no, you need to love the ridiculousness of the monster movies. And the more ridiculous they get, the better." Like that's basically my perspective on it.
In regards to our favorite Kaiju that just wants his kids back, will the kids ever show up in the series anytime soon?
Oh, for sure. I pride myself on sort of always paying off all my plot points. So, yeah, we'll make sure that we find out what happened and get everybody to the place they need to.
Who is your favorite character you've drawn for in this series?
There's always a couple background characters that I always think are really fun to draw. The little boy never is given a name. He's just called Little Boy. He's pretty fun to draw. The creature from Devil's Creek, the goat, he's super fun. He's fun to draw. I really like writing him, too. He's such a sad sack. Yeah, and then there's Mechazon, the Mechagodzilla-type character. I really enjoy him. He's fun, and also he's completely inconsistent. He's got all sorts of like metal stuff on it, and I never can quite remember exactly where it goes, so it kind of changes from panel to panel. All the characters are super fun to draw. The character of Gupta, the corrupt guard, I really enjoy drawing his super Ultraman version of him.
Is there a character that you can't wait to, for now human, to be under the foot of a kaiju at this point?
Like that I can't wait to get rid of?
Yeah. Like which character, if you can get rid of right now, which one would it be?
Oh man, I don't know. I mean, there's a couple characters that just are super complex. Like, fifth issue that just came out, I kind of averted it. Like, I was drawing a character that I wanted to make it look kind of like King Ghidorah, the three-headed dragon monster. So I drew the first head and drawing the other two heads, and I was like, ah, what am I, crazy? Like, do I really want to draw three heads on this stupid thing every time it shows up? I made the heads, like, chopped off. Like, they're just, like, stumps, bloody stumps, just so they wouldn't have to draw two heads. Now, of course, I really like the idea that he has just, like, these gross two bloody stumps that he walks around with. I kill him off, too, because he's got a lot of scales. It's just time. The funny thing is, it's just a matter of time, too. If something's too complicated, I'm just like, oh, man, forget it. But I've gotten pretty shrewd about designing characters, too, that it's just like, again, it's like, something's got three heads, well, I guess two are going to have to get chopped off, or else we're never going to make these deadlines.
If you have, I guess, that Koopa Trooper cameo, will there be anyone looking like Super Mario at all? Or any other Japanese references, or no cameos, everything just stays in this universe. No kind of, like, pop culture reference.
Kinda. I mean, like, the thing that I want to, like, I would find it difficult to put a Mario-type character in there. I mean, you never say never, of course. But I also think, There's a cuteness that comes with that I kind of wanted to avoid. Who knows what the future will hold? I do like the idea that new 80s-esque that could come in. I do try to have the characters more like archetypes, like that they're like two different characters or three different characters instead of directly like. Though I break that rule all the time. I guess the answer to that is I don't know. Maybe.
I've seen the comics in my little comic book store. I'm sure you have an online store. Where is the best way that people can pick up the books? Is it a comic book shop, or is it basically it should be better to get these online?
It all depends on where you are. Oni books are everywhere. They're in comic book stores everywhere, and that's always really fun. But of course, Comixology, all the digital retailers, specifically Comixology, do such a good job on these series. If you have a good device and you enjoy reading comics on a screen, not everybody does. That's a great experience too, and it's very easy to get. I'm trying to make each issue. I'm trying to make them really sort of very enjoyable to get in print. So there's a letters page, and there's like little capsule reviews of monster movies in the back. and that kind of stuff. Try to make it a lot of a conversation. So, but again, it's like, yeah, I really enjoy having the comic in my hands and really reading them. I feel like they're sort of old school comic, a completed chapter in each issue, and print first, digital if you can't find it.
Is there life after Kaiju? Is you pretty much up with Heck? Anything else coming up?
Well, Kaiju Max is an ongoing. About to finish the first season, which will be collected into a trade paperback, 6 issues, and then there will be a hiatus, and I'll start with season 2. Plan is to do 6 seasons of it. So this is the immediate future. I've got a stack of ideas, of course, for all other bunch of comics after that. Kaiju Max is my obsession for the next several years.
That's good. Is there any motion or any video game or any expansion for this universe?
I'm working on they're going to appear in a video game that I'm working on now. It just launched on Kickstarter, called Goliath, and there's going to be a level in it that is going to be set in Kaiju Max. I'm working on that right now, and then there are several other little sort of mini projects that are in the very beginning stages. So yeah, hopefully there will be plenty of expansion of the universe. But for now, the main story will always be in the comic.
Are you able to talk about Kickstarter now, or it's too soon?
If you look for Goliath under Kickstarter, you'll find it. It just launched. But again, I'm not managing that part of it. I'm working as a... I'm writing parts of the game, so...
Okay.
But so I don't have any...
Kendra, Ed, any questions before we wrap things up?
I've got a quick comment here, but I'll let Ed go first.
No, I mean, like, I've only been able to read the first 2 issues of this, and I was giggling, and I was hearing the different voices and what have you in my head of the different kaiju, and I keep wondering when the giant leg monster is going to show up or something like that. One that's always bigger than everybody else, and all you can see of it is like a foot or something. And I just think that would be awesome. I mean, the whole thing has been, it was cool and it was fun to read, so, and that's actually sorely missing in a lot of books these days, so A+ effort.
Oh, thanks.
Love it.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I mean, it's... Yeah, it is fun to... I don't know. It's hard to make a comic, but it's very easy to want to be serious. Aspirations for...
That's the one I liked about it. I mean, it was a good read. I remember all these monsters from when I was a kid, and it was just really cool. I enjoyed it.
It truly was a fun read. The cover itself drew you in immediately. Immediately, your eye goes to our lovely... I wouldn't even say tatted up monster. I mean, it looks more like a branded fun ride. And then my favorite parts that we didn't bring up were, you also have 2 sections at the end of the book. At the end of almost every issue, I believe, I saw.
Letters column, dude.
You do. It's great. I love it. It reminds me of the old Chaos stuff and the really, really super old DC and Marvel, where you would see pages and pages and pages of just people writing in and people saying how much they love the book, the fan art that they would showcase in there. And you have these 2 little columns that immediately caught my eye, and one was for people to, you know, do you want to see a monster of your favorite, one of your favorite monsters in the book? Go ahead and reach me out here and, you know, send me the idea and I'll try and come up with it and see it in the background of the comic book. That's wicked. That is cool. That's cool as hell.
It's really fun to cram them in there. You're at a loss for what to put in the background.
Right? I'm going to send one, and it's going to be like, Xander, you need putty. Like, I just need to see one putty hidden somewhere in the background, and that would make this issue complete.
All right, then. It's
but
cute.
The other part that I adore is this, I know we don't forget his name, but the little red monster.
You're Waldo.
You're Waldo.
Oh, yeah, right, Rubzo.
Back into the books just so we could find him. Because there's a little red monster that's hidden in every book, every issue. And I love that concept. Was that something that you came up with your munchkin? Was that something that you remembered from when the Waldo books were hugely popular?
Well, you know, it's funny, I had drawn the whole first issue and I just happened to have put that little guy in there just as a background joke or something. And then I thought, you know what, I should just have that be, you know, a hidden thing in every issue, because it was mainly because I liked Gru the Wanderer growing up, and like there was always a hidden message, and there was always lots of little like secret little gags that would kind of get you to read the whole book again, and I just thought, well, and of course it's like I'm putting this like sort of workbook type of thing into a book that's totally not for kids at all.
No, but that was something that was cool. Like, even if you didn't, as a parent, sit down, read, maybe let them read the comic, just that part of it was kind of cool to share as an experience. So kudos for that, even if it may not have been fully intentional for that purpose. It is still really cool to be like, okay, we're looking for this little guy. You see him in a panel. Yell.
Yeah, right. Yell, totally.
I think it would be epic if he turned out to be, like, super mastermind bad guy or something
right.
at the end of it all. He's been on every plot since the beginning, and nobody knew anything about it. A little unexpected thing in the background. I don't know.
You never know. You never know. Could be.
Keep reading now. Wait for season 6 to roll around. Be like, good idea. Hell yeah.
Xander, on social media, where can the good people find you?
Twitter, Xander_Cannon, Twitter. And then I'm on Facebook. Find me on Xander Cannon on Facebook. I'm not on Instagram as much as I usually as I'm on these other two. So you can also go to kaijumax.com, and that's the letters, basically the expanded letters column for the issue. I answer questions, post frequently asked questions, or little mini essays or stuff there, hopefully more frequently than the comic comes out.
Well, I'm sure we'll have you back not too distant future when you have several more issues after trade paperback number one, because this is an ongoing series that I do love the cliffhangers, and I do want to see what would happen next. I'm almost curious if we're ever going to get that comic where kaiju do take over the entire Earth. Not like ABC's Dinosaurs, mind you, or that god-awful plot in Super Mario Brothers, but I'm kind of curious, like, if humanity does get wiped out and the monsters do take over, like, what would they do? And I'm kind of curious to see what that aspect will ever lead into. I don't know if you're ever going to go that, you know, if that's a suggestion or, you know, request. I'm just kind of curious. I just love to see, like, okay, humanity's wiped out. This is the new species that takes over the Earth. Where do we go from here? Not Planet of the Apes or anything else, just like no human, just new creatures. After all, there were these documentaries on History Channel and Sci-Fi, like what's the next step of evolution, so just out of curiosity. But keep up the good work, Xander. And
well,
thank you for stopping by. Folks, you know where else to find us. Leave any comments at hunnickfeedback@gmail.com. Find us on Facebook, Hunnick Outcast, Twitter at Hunnick Outcast.
We just found out today that we'd already gotten issues 1 and 2 of Volume 1 for the Wonder Funders anthology. I found out that as of today, not only did Volume 3 come out, but also we have Volume 4 that are both up for sale at the same time, and I did go ahead and share that, not only on my page, but I'll continue sharing it anywhere that I... Second, the third volume is a great team of artists who came up with that in a great five-page split-up mini art jam, and then the fourth one has not only my inks in it, but it also has Edward. So we're really excited about that. Finally have deadline dates set that I can't give out, but deadline dates set out for Until We Sleep, not only Until We Sleep, is number 2, but also ones for Angel Wars and another book that's soon going to be released, and we're looking at October. The first one is already up for sale at UntilWeSleepComics.com. Those are the two main ones right now.
And I'm going to be a character in Until We Sleep, and I guess I'll kind of be like a kaiju where I destroy the West Coast. So
yeah.
I'm like stoked for that. Well, thanks everyone, and we'll talk to you all next time.
Hey, Geekcast listeners, do you ever listen to Punisher Body Count and think to yourself, this show would be awesome if it had less toilet humor and was not about the Punisher? If so, join me, Emily Williams, as I class up the Punisher guys on Dane and Jake Get Classy. We're like the Oprah Book Club of comics. You'll hear us discuss famous works like The Dark Knight Returns and The Grow, along with graphic novels no one else is talking about, like Blue Monday and Blankets. You can find us at daneandjakegetclassy.wordpress.com. Or on iTunes.
Pixels in the Animation is the Geekcast Radio Network's video game cartoon review show. We are covering every episode of 9 different video game cartoons. Join TV's Mr. Neil and myself, TFG and Mike, as we trek through multiple Mario tunes, Zelda, Captain N, Mega Man, Sonic, and we are also driving through Donkey Kong Country. Pixels in the Animation is 100 episodes of video game cartoon goodness, so tune in to help us find the Pixels in the Animation, which you can find every Wednesday on iTunes and www.geekcastradio.com.
Yes, what is this thing called sleep again?
I don't know. I haven't had any in a while.
Yeah.
Really, bro?
What is that, from Silent Night, Deadly Night 2? I don't sleep. Okay.
I missed that one.
Oh, Silent Night, Deadly Night 2?
Yeah.
That's actually the best in the entire series. Yeah, you don't need to see one. If you just... If you just watch two, it shows the best of one, and then it goes right into two.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, it's efficient. I like it.
Yeah.
Ooh. Our Pokemon animated series was a fever dream of Ash while he'd lay dying in a bed. Ooh. I'm going to plug your nerd card. Because you pulled out your Nintendo wallet in the middle of the interview. I lost my shit. That was epic, dude. Your nerd card has been, like, officially stamped. Original Nintendo controller. That was epic.
Technical difficulties. Let's move on, shall we?